Blog Talk Radio.
Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Our show tonight is Dialysis Advocates, and it's hosted by Arlene Mullen. I want to remind everyone that these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. Arlene will be at the summit this year, so will I. We'll both be moderating panels. If you can make it out there, we'd sure appreciate it. It is open to the public, and admittance is free. A lot going on over a three-day period there. With that being said, Arlene has an extremely, extremely valuable guest this evening, and we're very honored to have her. So, Arlene, I'm going to let you take it from here.
Okay. Thanks, Marty, and thanks, Marcel, for providing us with radio time. It's very much appreciated to educate. Welcome, Tara. I am so thrilled, and Greg Coleman is going to help co-host tonight. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, and I have a special questions from a nine-year-old. I will wait till last. She's dreaming of being a video star, and it's quite good. So I'll save that later on. I want to find out about you. What is the name of your organization?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here. Yeah, such an honor and a pleasure. The name of my organization is called African American Women in Cinema.
Okay, and how did you get started?
Well,
I'm looking at your bio, and I'm like, all the awards that you received, I was sure I was going to run out of ink. You know? But you, Student Academy Awards, Oscars, New York Film Festival, NATPE, in addition, produced Women of Excellence Salute Award by Morgan Stanley, have created a platform for women of color filmmakers during Sundance Film Festival with the partnership of, I hope I don't run out of air, Utah Film Studio. You were featured in Essence Magazine representing the Walmart Year Award. And you also were 2011 NAACP Woman of the Year, 2012 Bill McQuarrie Living Legend Award, 2013 Keeping the Dream Award by the prestigious youth organization Jumpstart, 2014 Bridge Builder Award from the United African Coalition, 2017 Woman on a Mission Award, the Total Faith Network Award, Dorothy Dandridge Image Award, 2017 Promo Consulting Group partnership with Nelson Mandela Award in Paris. Did I leave anything out?
Yes, I've got to say something here.
I'm just
How
like,
did you
wow,
get all of that? I can't even get anybody to say, gosh, Marty, you did a good job. This is not right.
I think I forgot the United Way. Barrage College Leadership of Nonprofit Sector. You said, go on, Tara.
Well, you know, I thank you so much. And just to hear it just rehearsed in your hearing, you know, it's in my hearing, it's just amazing because what got me started was years ago, I was called by a casting director, and she was hired by Warner Brothers to hire a African-American actress who was not a size zero for a under five role. And an under five role, simply means under five lines. And a lot of the times in these major motion pictures, those who have those roles sometimes don't make the cut in the film. They actually end up on the edit floor. So I was just really gung-ho, believing that I would get the part. And when I showed up at the audition site, I was so shocked to see about 1,000 women who fit the bill. And so the advocacy just rose up in me. And I said, oh, I have to create jobs for women of color, you know. So I started writing a screenplay. Didn't want to initially do it because, you know, writing a grant, it really takes a lot of time. But I went ahead and did it anyway. And later I found out I did get the grant. And so one of the criterias in receiving the grant check is that you would attend their awards luncheon. And so that is what I did. And I met a young lady there who wanted to be my publicist, and I kind of chuckled because I said, you know, I'm just getting started. I'm not sure if there's a lot to even write about. But she smiled and said, no, there's definitely something that we can do. So basically, out of the meeting, it was only supposed to be a one-time event, and I said, okay, I'll call it African American Woman in Cinema, but it was really designed to bring awareness to what I was doing so I could realize my dream, which was to create more roles for women. And back when we got started, it was just really minimal opportunity for women, period, but certainly in particular women of color. So, but when we launched the program, women from everywhere showed up, and I was just so shocked. And I said, okay, well, this is what I believe I should be doing. I never planned this in my life. It took me to Africa. It took me to Ireland. It took me to England, across the country showing films. As you have read, the awards that I received and written up in major publications, being on ABC and CNN, all this stuff I never, ever planned. 2006 was monumental because I was recognized by the United States Postal Service with their award, the Hattie McDaniel Award, and that really touched me because she was the first African-American actress to win an Oscar. So, you know, but the most thing was that really – what I had envisioned and dreamed to create opportunities for women slowly but surely began to be realized. And about several years ago, we received a call from a distribution company that expressed great interest in our filmmakers and that we've been hosting through the years at our film festival. And basically they said that they wanted to offer deals, distribution deals, to them in which they would be paying licensing fees, both euros and U.S. dollars. And that was a milestone. And just seeing these, what you had envisioned in goals, creating opportunities come to pass. But just having the wherewithal to hang in there until it manifests.
Yeah. What program are you working on now that deals with kidney issues?
Yes. I'm glad that you brought that up. we have a unique opportunity to host a film screening program at the Sundance Film Festival. Super excited about that. And the film that we received, I was so excited to receive it. One of the reasons why last year, we did an anti-gun violence tour, and it was in response to all the mass shootings that we have been having here in this country. And when we went to different cities, we found one of the major issues that a lot of the folks in the audience was dealing with or kept bringing up was mental health. And so we decided that we wanted to start that initiative and make it as a platform to start the dialogue and for 2019. Subsequently, we received a film, a very powerful film about a young man who had kidney issues. He found out he was diagnosed with kidney issues, and he had to start dialysis, which was a whole life transformation for him. And finally, he was able to get a kidney, and then he had complications behind that, but not so much physically, but mentally. So with that, it just brought up such a unique opportunity to have a platform to talk about the folks who are experiencing kidney matters, who are on dialysis. I have a personal story about someone who I knew close to me, unfortunately had a kidney disease and had to start dialysis, and to watch their life transform, you know, from what they were used to doing and just contend with what they had to contend with, it was just interesting. But, you know, the good news is that thank God that they had a great attitude and basically said, you know, I'm going to be fine. You know, I appreciate your support. I appreciate you standing by my side. You know, I'm not a big fan of being connected to these machines, but, you know, I know that I will be fine. And then that really encouraged me it gave me hope because, you know, like I said, when you see someone, they're one way one day, and then the next day they receive a diagnosis, and now they have to, you know, participate in that type of health matter. So, this matter is very near and dear to me.
Well, I believe, and a lot of times I'll change people's language to a more positive, because I do believe that it's a word, and it's horrible to be hooked up to these machines, but there's so much that we're working on into getting, you know, answers for this. I'm going to ask really quick my friend's granddaughter's question. Her name's Savannah, and then I'm going to hand it over to Marty and Greg. She wants to know, and this is a 9-year-old's question here. Okay, how did you get so famous?
I want to know that myself.
And she's from Tallahassee, Florida, Savannah. Yeah. She does these little films, and she's quite good.
Oh,
but,
really?
So she wanted me to ask you.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Savannah. She is so sweet and precious. Would love to see some of her work as well. Well, you know, it's amazing when you follow what you really sense in your inner man to go forward. It's amazing how doors begin to open. It's like an alignment, and one thing leads to another. You know, I did not expect to be in Essence magazine. That was a situation. I'll tell that story quickly. I'm trying to figure out how to put it in a 9-year-old language.
Well, how do you get famous? It's real simple, Carol. And I'll gladly show you her work. She's really good for 9 years old.
Wow. Would love, love, love to see her work. Well, the Essence magazine story, I love to share a lot because it just really talks about the alignment when you follow your passion. And I had an incident that had transpired and was trying to fix it. When you follow your passion, when you follow your purpose, there's going to always be some form of opposition. But the key is that you just, you know, continue to move forward. And so, but this particular time, I was really, really down. I was tired, and I was really considering not moving on any further with the organization. And unbeknownst to me, when I was contemplating that, the next day I got an email from an organization based in Chicago that they had a partnership with Walmart and Essence magazine, and they were looking for someone to be featured in the December issue. And so they found me and wanted me to do it, wanted to know if I would be interested. And I was shocked because I said, wow, the night before I was ready to quit, and now I'm being offered to be in Essence. So I said, yes, absolutely. So everyone was excited, and then I showed up on the set, and the creative director shared with me, he said, you know, the evening before we called you, he said he was in the corner praying that I would accept the opportunity because it was myself being considered along with Debbie Allen and also Suzanne DePass. And so when he pitched me to the agency, they went with me. And then so his last pitch was to Walmart. And then Walmart said, yes, we definitely want Tara. And I was shocked because all this was going on during the time that I was ready to quit. And so when you walk in your purpose, the doors begin to open, doors of opportunity for, I believe, for visibility. And that will help make you famous. As Savannah.
Okay. Well, number two is what should I do to be famous?
That is so cute. That is so cute.
She's a sweetie.
Well, all Savannah has to do is stay on the path that she's on in making films. Now, she is already a little famous tonight because we're talking about her. And I'm going to see her work, certainly looking forward to it. We had a youth segment in which we actually screened young women, young girls, actually films during our film festival. So I would love, love, love to see her work. And who knows, maybe we can be on a path to assist her in her goal to become famous.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. Greg, do you have – Greg is a dialysis patient in Marty.
Yes.
So
yes.
I'm
yes.
done with all my questions.
Oh, sure, sure. Okay. Before I want Greg – yeah. I want Greg to talk with her specifically about dialysis. But before we get started, Tara, you mentioned mental health. And I want to talk to you just a little bit about this.
Sure.
Because it is related to dialysis. Many of the drugs, mental health today is basically a system of drugging people with these horrendous psychotropic drugs that not only cause frontal cortex brain damage, but they also, many of them cause renal failure. They don't tell you that. You have to look that up for yourself. You can look it up on the FDA or go to the manufacturer. Getting into this, I would ask that you look at the medications these people are being given and actually look at the information the manufacturer provides on them. And many times what you're going to find, two of the worst out there that cause renal failure are Cipro and Leviquin, too. They're chemotherapy drugs, actually, that they're handing out now as an antibiotic. And but when they added them to chemotherapy, they were supposed to fight the infection caused by chemo, and they were killing people faster than they could collect their projected profits. So they went to the FDA. Now, I can support everything I'm telling you. They went to the FDA and paid a $5 million fast-track fee and got them put out as a general antibiotic. And prohibitions on using them is not on people over 60, not in conjunction with corticosteroids like prednisone or NSAIDs like aspirin, ibuprofen, etc. They do it all day long. And especially in older people, what it does is it attacks their kidneys. And many of these people end up on dialysis. Behind a lot of these people who need dialysis, I'm finding there is a history of being administered either these psychotropic drugs and or these toxic so-called antibiotics. So I would hope when you look at that, and as far as the mental health issue alone goes, the propensity, the history of mental health is, when you actually look at it, is a horror story. People claim have mental health issues too many times are used for experimentation. They have done horrendous things to these people all in the name of, well, we're trying to save people. And so, I mean, I would look at that. Every one of these mass shootings that you mentioned by these kids coming out of these schools, every one of them has a history of being on these medications, which openly say they cause suicidal, homicidal ideation, violence, aggression, and all of this. And if taken for too long, can cause renal failure. So I'm hoping these
A lot of psychotropic drugs, a lot of drugs call, I think, that cause renal failure. But these Prozac and all that, I think they banned under a certain age. And they're the ones, like Marty says, that were doing the school shootings or whatever.
Yes.
So it is a problem. But they, diabetes, I note, is another another, and your your pharmaceuticals are causing renal failure.
Exactly, and Prozac is a direct cause of Parkinson's disease, among other things. And but Tara, I'm just asking that when you research this and you start putting this together, please look at that aspect of it, because I think the medication that they are giving people are causing these downstream problems. And see, we're all we're doing is creating more business while we're telling you we're making you better. They're actually causing severe damage to the body and the brain. And like I say, too many of them, when you read through this long list of adverse reactions, is renal failure. I got a problem with that. So that's all I have to say. I'm going to be quiet now, Tara. Greg,
you're right on, because the pharmaceuticals are really high in high blood pressure and diabetes and are causing renal failure. You're totally right, Marty. And Greg?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Your turn.
I'm all done. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Pleasure to meet you. I haven't talked to a superstar in quite a while.
Blow me off, Greg. Yeah.
I just want to tell you that I'm very proud of your accomplishments.
Oh, well, thank you and so much.
You're quite welcome. And I'm very thankful for the fact that you shed a light on something that most of general society doesn't know about dialysis, simply because the ugly truth about dialysis is hidden inside of sharp, quick, pretty commercials and publications and paper, like DaVita, their title Their title mm-hmm. means to give life. I started at DaVita.
Wow.
And let me tell you, the very last thing that DaVita gives is life. Mm. They will help you. They will help you painfully survive, but mm. they do not give life. They make profit.
Mm.
So I just want to throw that in there, and I want to get back mm-hmm. to your accomplishments. This title.
Thank you.
Oh, mm-hmm. you're quite welcome. This title. Can you explain what inspired mm-hmm. this title? What Death Leaves Behind?
Mm-hmm.
What was the inspiration for it?
Mm-hmm.
And give me some context as to what it means.
Okay. Well, it's we are featuring this particular film, What Death Leaves Behind, at our Sundance program. And what the filmmakers explained to me was that this was actually based on a true story. A young man, actually based in Philadelphia, he needed a kidney, and he received a kidney from a murder victim.
Okay.
And what happened was, not too long after he received the kidney, he started having these flashes of someone being murdered. And so, anyway, they took that premise, the writer of the movie took that premise and mm. just build on a storyline, and it's a real classic festival piece because it really began to show the effect that this now new kidney recipient is having. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, on one side it was positive because he can continue to live, but on the other side, he was being mentally tormented because
mm-hmm.
of these flashbacks. So what I didn't know, as they were explaining to me, they were saying that through some research, the filmmakers were explaining to me doing some research that it is a written fact that the organs, are being donated to folks that need them, they do actually pick up some elements of their previous owner. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen.
That was very shocking. Mm-hmm.
I've seen movies.
They just came out
about
recently.
That.
Okay. They've just come out recently. Scientists have, and where they thought memory was stored in the brain, they find out that it's actually stored at a cellular level. And in the articles I have read about that, they talk about exactly what you're talking about, that the transfer
wow.
of that organ transfers on a cellular level the memory of the person it came from. And a lot of times people with transplant, particularly when it's kidney or heart, will start
mm.
exhibiting the
mm-hmm.
traits or gestures or different things that were peculiar to the person, to the donor. They'll start
wow.
exhibiting it. They don't know where it came from. And they talk about having these memories that come out of nowhere. This came out, Tara, about the same time they discovered that 80% of the neurons that they thought were all rotating in the brain were actually
wow.
circulating in the gut. So when people said
wow.
they had a gut instinct, they were actually very accurate. Because those neurons are more of them are there that are in the brain. This is a very complex topic, and I want to see this film. I do.
Me too.
And I want to see this. And
mm-hmm.
will it be shown anywhere, Tara? I mean, other than Sundance? I mean, will they?
Well,
have
we're going to show it in. We're going to show it in New York for our film festival, the end of March, honoring Women's History Month. And then I will talk to the filmmakers to see where else, because their goal is to get a distribution deal so it can be in the theaters and be made available to audiences nationally as well as internationally. So, but I will keep you posted on that. Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
Greg.
I certainly hope that happens because I haven't even seen it yet. And it feels like it's worthy of that kind of national and international attention because, like I said, the movies, this is like a joke for most of society when people say, well, I'm scared that if I get this organ from this person, I may become like them, or if they were evil, I may become evil. And most of the times they attribute it to, like, the psychological trauma of having a transplant.
Yes, but that's so true.
This movie pretty much proves that there's a physical basis for what goes on in the body when you get an organ from another human being and put it in your body. And the title is perfect. Now I understand it completely.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah, yeah. I can see the connection.
I would be anxious to see this come out where you could purchase it because I would buy a copy.
And if it does
get to that point, Tara, if it gets to that point, you let me know. We'll help promote it.
Wonderful.
You know, and try to get you out there. And but this is, and another thing about all of this too, is that they have found through kinetic photography that, like, when people lose a hand, the outline of the hand, the electrical, because we are electrical beings, our whole body is fired with electricity, whether we know it or not. That's why you get zapped when you walk across the carpet. But that outline will still be there even though the hand is missing. So I'm wondering, you know, I'm wondering if, you know, how far they have actually delved into this. I would be interested in knowing that. As far as, like, people getting kidneys, we talked on the last show about the shortage of donors, about people not even being able to donate a kidney because they can't get paid for it. I kind of feel like this, if you can donate your eyes and you can donate this and that and something else and everybody else is getting paid, why can't that donor, you know, why should anybody in this country? Go ahead, Arlene.
Oh, no, go on up. When you, I'll wait till you finish.
I was
terrible.
Just
going to
say, why
I'm
should anybody in this country not have, was it Iran, you said, Arlene, where people donate to get paid?
Yeah, well, I had, Iran, my girlfriend, she is a lawyer, and she also is an ethicist, which all our lawyers say that's kind of an odd combination. But anyhow, she went over to Iran with a doctor, and she was, you know, they didn't know what her purpose was there, but she studied. She has a book. I have to put it on our website, I mean, on our Facebook. But she wrote a book, and what they do is it helps bring people out of poverty. They pay for the kidney, and they transplant the kidney. And Iran has little to none dialysis. In this country, it's nothing more than, I'll email you some things about what's happening in this industry now. The patients really are at a disadvantage in this country because it's not about health care. It's about profit, period.
Yes.
And Greg, do you want to, you know, did you want to go on and tell her about, I think it's better coming from a patient, about what it's like to be on dialysis and how you treat it?
Oh, yes, hell on earth. Like I said, they have a lot of fancy presentations on paper or maybe on the radio or on TV, and they paint this really beautiful picture about, we will take care of your loved ones whose kidneys have failed. We will give them life. We will treat them with kindness. But actually, the opposite is true. It's actually, you know, what they say, that things that you do, the things you do are just as important, or the reasons you do the things you do are just as important as doing it. So the incentive for dialysis corporations is simply this, is to give dividends to their shareholders. That's it. If you walk into a dialysis center and you let the smiles and the hugs and the handshakes fool you, then that's on you. But that's why I encourage dialysis patients to read and educate themselves about the business of dialysis and about their illnesses, because you can be very easily deceived by all of this business etiquette and making you feel special and making you feel like you're cared for and loved. And basically, as I said, the bottom line is the bottom line. They will do anything to get those numbers. It's all about numbers. It's not like sometimes I feel like I'm not a human being who's sick. I feel like I've entered into a sporting competition between the dialysis corporations and the United States government, which is Medicare and Medicaid, where they will pump you full of toxic pharmaceuticals, cut you open, do all kinds of things to make that criteria, that number, and to keep those stars, because that's how they get paid. So,
well, I think, too, Greg, the terminations. They terminate patients. You have a movie. Believe me, you have another movie. They terminate patients who complain. I have stories you wouldn't believe, and it's hard to believe until you read the documents. I think Chili May, I don't know if he filled you in a little bit, but what they do is they're immune from the Stark Law, which means they can profit off the patients, and they're the only physicians that are allowed to do that. Well, the for-profits went in, and one size fits all, and we have the third highest mortality rate in the world.
Oh, my God.
And when these patients are terminated for complaints, I mean, we've got some pretty graphic stories, more than one, hundreds of them, to where if a patient complains or they're not lucrative enough, because like Greg said, you get paid for those stars. And if they get rid, it seems like a lot of terminations happen. But when they happen, they can only be treated when they're terminal. And it is a law that was passed in Congress in 1975that every person is entitled to dialysis, which you probably know. However, when you have your own oversight, and no matter where a patient goes, it goes back to the oversight. These patients are in a circle of violence and can't get out of them. And really quickly, because I want to get back to you, is that when these patients are terminated, they can only be treated when they're near death. You have to have a criteria that you're near death. And why would they terminate their patients? To the fact that they terminate them because they make more money, because they usually have the contract from the hospitals. They make $1 million a year off taxpayer dollars to treating only when they're near death. But anyhow, what's your next agenda? Enough of the soapbox, sorry. Sorry, Greg. It's like you're a captive audience, Kara.
No, it's amazing, what people are going through and, what they are experiencing in the name of, quote unquote, getting better health, and it's not like that. And so, part of me is just such an advocate to go in the areas and bring awareness and shine the light on these unjust ways I mean, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. So I really appreciate you all for sharing that with me.
I will provide
you
documents too.
Yes.
Are you going into social justice?
I've been asked that.
you sound, because I've had people tell me that when you get stories like what you've had, and even with your bio, are you kind of veering more towards social justice?
I don't know yet. That's still out.
Really?
That's still out. Yeah.
She's already got a foot in the door.
Good going, Craig. You're quick. No, I think I will send you some actual case files. And I know Chili's upset over it.
Mm-hmm,
when you read it, you realize this is an exaggeration in any way, shape, or form. But our patients really do not have any rights.
Wow.
They're just cash cows. So I hope you go into a little bit of social justice. I'll help you. I'm going to be in New York next month. I don't know the date. I hope you're available and not traveling. I'd love to meet you in person.
Oh, would love that. Yes, would love to meet you as well.
And
absolutely.
I'll bring Savannah's artwork.
Oh, good.
Videos.
That will be fantastic. Would love to see it.
Marty, what do you think?
I'm just sitting here in awe.
Yeah, I am too.
you know, seriously, I just gobstopped. I keep looking at this bio, and I want to know how one person does all of that in one lifetime, and you ain't done yet. See, I just want to know.
I think I have a sentence, at least a sentence, of my accomplishments, and we'll put your sentence.
Mine will go up there, and we'll say, Marty Oakley was here, and now she's gone. And that's all it'll say.
Yeah, it'll say the legend, remember?
Yeah.
Chili calls her the legend.
But, no, do you think, Tara, do you think you could, this could be a possibility for a documentary on this?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my favorite documentarians is Michael Moore. Because I love the way that he just really researched and tell a story. I really, what was an eye-opener for me was his documentary called Sicko. I don't know if you all had the opportunity to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
one. Yeah, it really.
I need to watch it, I guess.
Yeah, and how he got the footage of Nixon talking about the healthcare industry and really making it into a profit one, it was absolutely mind-blowing. And that's when I start to realize how much it is a business versus real healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that documentary he did. It really brought some insight.
Yes.
Well, this when you start reading the documents, you're going to realize these patients really do. This needs to get out. Because, I mean, no matter where a patient complains to, it goes back to the oversight, be it civil rights, be it whatever.
And see,
well,
that's the problem.
The
incentive, the reason why they do these things are not for humanitarian purposes. You know, it's the intent. Because if the intent was for humanity, well, then they wouldn't be terminating patients, which to me is the equivalent of murder. They wouldn't do that because you're not maximizing their profits. You know, so
the
intentions for doing it is money.
They have investors too, that are going into this healthcare. Warren Buffett is one of the biggest Berkshire in for Javita, and I don't think he knows what he really is making his money or supporting. But this is
well, they
not.
Have,
so who gets paid? The
they
go on, Maria.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Arlene. I apologize. But they have those,
I do it all the time.
Well, they have those what they call Deadpool hedge funds, where people invest in groups of people like women who have breast cancer, people that have leukemia, that kind of thing, these Deadpool hedge funds, and they're investing in it, and they're actually banking on they're hedging their bet on how long you're going to live. The head of Goldman Sachs
wow.
just came out recently and admitted that there is no profit in curing illness. The profit lies in treating it or, you know, marketing it, but there is no profit incentive in curing it. And these Deadpools, I discovered probably about 10 years ago that these big hedge funds are running that people invest in. And that he, at the time, the person who had brought this research together said, if they found a cure, say, for instance, for breast cancer, these hedge funds would collapse and everybody'd lose their money. So there's no chance. And at about the same time, they came out with these stinking mammograms that cause breast cancer, and everybody's making money hand over fist. And we're removing women's breasts. 80% of the time, these machines give a false positive. 64% of the time, they miss an actual cancer. But they said they have to keep using them because they got so much money invested in them. After all, we're just talking about women's breasts here.
Oh.
And you guys whack those dogs off. We don't care. But I want to know why, when a man has testicular cancer, we don't remove the scrotum in the penis. Now, there's something wrong with
mm-hmm.
this. But anyway, go back to these kidneys. If we had a system in this country where people could voluntarily donate their kidney, and many people would, and get paid
yeah.
for it, why should you not get paid for it? Why should you not get paid for it? Everybody else is getting paid. Why should you, the donor that makes it all possible, not get paid? You're giving up a piece of your body. I think getting a few bucks for that is a small thing to ask. Why this prohibition is in place, this doesn't make sense to me at all. But there again, if you did this, we basically could end the dialysis mess, and
right.
the incentive is gone.
Well, there's answers, but you know, every patient's supposed to be able to be on the transplant list. I'm finding that the doctor last week said 4 years is what a patient would survive if they're not getting proper treatment. But the point is why not transplant right away? And if you pay, there's two organizations out there. The one lady from Iran that went to Iran, she runs an organization. I think she stepped down, but she's still on the board. However, what they do is people would give kidneys, donate kidneys, but a lot of people, and the government will pay for the donor's surgery. However, they don't pay for the time lost for the donor. So this organization pays the donors the 6 weeks before they go back to work, which would free up kidneys. It is really a problem, and I will be sending you documents, but I think you've got a real good story here on human suffering. We're going to make you into... you know,
we're going to make you a star, Tara.
Yes. I stopped myself.
Famous.
We all want to be in your film. And we'll bring Savannah.
Oh, yes.
There's a part for us,
good.
Isn't there, Marty?
Yes. I can see
we'd have two lines then, Tara. We'd have two lines on our bio.
And they'll be very
Arlene
powerful.
Yeah, just Arlene and Marty. That's all I would say. But, yeah,
we have to have Greg, too.
Yeah, well, Greg could hold the sign.
We need adult supervision, Marty.
Adult supervision. But no, Tara, seriously, I don't consider this. I think this is one of the most egregious things that goes on in our healthcare system, hospice running a close second, if not neck and neck with it. That's another whole topic I just don't dare get started on. But this needs to be exposed. It needs to be out in the public. People need to see how this system really works and what's happening to these people. And you know, the thing is, I've found in all the things I deal with, the tendency of people who hear it for the first time or haven't been personally exposed to some of this is always, oh, well, you must have done something wrong. Well, if you hadn't done something, I wouldn't do that. Well, there's something else here you're not telling me. No, that's the worst part of it. None of those things are true. I deal mostly with guardianship abuse by these predator guardians and attorneys where they steal the estate. And I have heard for years, well, must have done something wrong. No, they didn't do anything. They aged with assets. That's a crime now, as I understand it. But this is what I'm saying. The disbelief of people and doing a documentary on dialysis and what actually transpires and why so many people are in dialysis and then how they use to make money. I think if that was people's faces, this system would change.
I think it's not about healthcare. It's about profit, and it filters down to their investors first. I think Kent Thury, which is DaVita, a few years ago made $68 million in a bonus. That's just his. But the patients, we have some film that's really, really devastating of what really goes on in these centers. It's a secret society. Do you feel like you're ganged up upon, Renee?
Well, me? No, not at all. I'm enjoying this.
About
immensely.
You.
No, this is great. This is great.
Well, Tara, I have a question. Before you came on the show tonight, what was your perception of the medical community, dialysis centers, hospitals, doctors? What was your perception of the medical field?
Well, in that context, you know, until I had a close friend that actually started the dialysis process, I really had no clue, only because, you know, first, I didn't even realize that so many dialysis were going up, being built in a lot of neighborhoods. And I really, until that point, did not experience anyone close to me who had to engage in that process.
Okay.
And until that happened and I start seeing the effects, you know, and the toll that it began to take on them, I think I was really focused on the person well-being as they started the process and really did not get the opportunity to see the political side of it. And so it's amazing how it's all starting to come out, and I'm, you know, making the connections and the dots, putting the dots together.
Okay. Well, you're like most people. They really don't know. And the only reason I know is because in 2002, that's when I was first diagnosed. And from my first treatment, I began to hate dialysis. And then I began... It motivated me to start looking deeper behind the smiles and the handshakes and to study what was really going on and how they will actually, if you get into an argument with a tech or someone, they will actually set the machine to make you pass out.
Wow.
You know, which should be illegal and probably is, but they get away with it because they're so underregulated.
Mm.
Well, they regulate themselves, but also they called the police. A lot of patients have police records, and to help terminate these patients, and the police will respond to any. We have actual police reports. Will respond to any disturbance in a private business, and that's enough to get them terminated. Because my gosh, they're so afraid. And that's the only way they can terminate is with false accusations.
Mm.
And there's no police report. But we've had patients who have had to leave because the police came and they take the patient off because it is a private business. And that's why you find them popping up everywhere because they are private businesses. But
well,
there's a lot of patients with police records.
Seems to me any agency that is accepting federal funding, which these businesses are, they're federally funded, there should be a federal board of oversight that isn't comprised of nephrologists and you know, people who have a vested interest, what we lovingly call stakeholders. I hate that word. Basically, that's code for everybody that's given us money. But people that are non-affiliated to take a look at these situations and determine what is actually going on here. Is this benefiting? Are they just throwing money down a black hole? As it stands now, I'd say they are. You cannot have this many people dying every year.
We can prove they are.
Yeah.
We can prove they are with our documents. See, that's the thing is I became an advocate. We did. And by becoming an advocate, I saw a law that every patient has the right to an advocate because these patients have behavioral contracts. What behavioral and how to terminate a patient the right way? I have actual documents.
Oh.
You know who did those documents? The network and CMS.
Wow.
Now, what medical disease or illness would you do that to a cancer patient, give them a behavioral contract? No, because they'd have a choice of where to go. Where dialysis patients, you can have one across the street and you're not allowed to go there until you have that nephrologist permission. Chili, I'm keeping him in the loop, but I think that you really need to see actual cases in patients who have been abused. We also have character assassinations, made up things in the medical charts. One saying that she was a drug addict and 2 years of rehabilitation before she would have a kidney. Well, guess what? That wasn't true. We have documentation. So what lawyer will take and believe they read that, or anybody reads that, they are going to believe what is written in that chart.
We have less than a minute left here. Tara, I want to thank you for coming on this evening. You've been a wonderful guest, and I think we're all honored to have you on here.
Oh,
we don't get stars.
You will be hearing from Savannah, I'm sure.
But thank you. And Greg, thank you for contributing to. You added quite a bit to the conversation. Arlene, you're just a thorn in my side. That's all there is to it.
Me too. I miss legend.
Yes, Tara,
I need
I'm so proud of you.
Yes. And
I'll get your bio over and over.
And
I'm proud of you, and I want you to keep up the good work.
Thank you so
much.
The
Whistleblower Summit in D.C. taking place at the end of July. I'll be there. Arlene will be there. Hopefully many of you can attend. And everybody, we had a full call board and a load of audience tonight. Thank you so much, everyone who tuned in, and we'll be back again next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.